Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go. Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, we take a look at the business of football, how investors have reacted to the escalation of the conflict in the Middle East, and US inflation rises. All that and more next. Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 11th of June, 2026, a day where the Australian share market fell, the ASX 200 down 0.23%. We'll have the details with Henry Jennings from Marcus today soon, including what he is telling his clients. But first, there is just one short sleep to go until the start of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. But as the world's most popular sport with double the number of global fans than cricket, according to FIFA, it's hoped the winners of the tournament extend beyond the football field and into the economy. For a look at the business of football, I spoke with Mark Anderson, co-head global asset allocation at UBS GWM CIO. Okay, Mark, with the FIFA World Cup about to start, just how big is the business of football and what role do you think the FIFA World Cup plays in this?
So football is the biggest sports that we have, with an estimated 5 billion fans around the world. And it's also the sports that generates the biggest revenue. In the context of that, the World Cup is also the biggest sporting event that we know, engaging around 6 billion people worldwide, which is an extraordinary three quarters of this world's population. And that's something that's making it both a cultural and an economic phenomenon. So when we look at the World Cup specifically, on some estimates, we're likely to generate around 40 billion of economic value, which is equivalent to the country Denmark, where I'm from, what's being produced during those 5 weeks of the World Cup.
What about the economics of sport, especially football? How are they changing in terms of, I guess, how we're watching it and the growing parts of the code?
So when I was growing up, watching football was the 90 minutes on a Saturday afternoon, watching a Premier League game or the like. But today, football is being consumed way beyond those 90 minutes. So when you look at younger fans, most of football is actually being consumed on social media. It's in shorter clips. And guess what? It's often during working hours as well. So there you go. But what this means is that there is sort of a lot more regular engagement, especially these younger fans. They also want content beyond just the game. They want to see what the athletes are doing. They want to follow their teams on the training pitch, etc. And that creates a lot of potential for commercial value through advertisement, etc. Another very important trend is what we see in women's football. So during the 2023 World Cup, we had almost 2 billion people following that tournament. And at the same extent, we're seeing significant growth in revenues around women's sports. On top of it, the fan base that's watching women's football is also very attractive. It's typically a higher consuming segment, slightly more educated than its male counterpart, it turns out. And that is something that makes it a very attractive growth area in football.
What about sport as an asset class more broadly? What do investors need to be aware of?
So sports as an asset class is definitely growing. And when we watch how it's been performing over the last couple of decades, it's done extremely well in terms of return. So we've seen it outperforming major global equity indices if you're invested into sports. And at the same time, it has done so with very little correlation to other traditional asset classes. It basically means that we are very likely to consume sports also in times of economic disarray where you might be losing your job. You're still following your team. You're still consuming within football. So it makes it attractive from several metrics. when we look forward in terms of football in particular, we also see that the fan base is very geographically diverse. It's exposed to high growth areas such as Asia, Latin America, Middle East, where people are likely to use still a bigger part of their wallet and spending on things such as sports and football in particular. So we do think that there is a great potential for investors to increase their exposure to sports. That's both through listed equities, but it's also through different funds that can be private equity, private debt. Imagine investing into both clubs, leagues, financing of stadiums, etc.
That is Mark Anderson there from UBS GWM CIO. Now, while there are 5 billion fans globally, those attending may have some financial gripes. I spoke with UTS chief economist Tim Harcourt to find out more.
Okay, Tim, there's a lot of excitement about the FIFA World Cup, but also a bit of concern about the price of tickets, as we know. Why is that?
Well, there's this process called dynamic pricing that is quite common in America, which is based on peak demand. So if there's peak demand, they put the price up straight away. And traditional soccer fans, football fans, are not used to that, even though American sports fans are. So dynamic pricing means you can adjust it according to peak demand and supply. So it's a bit like, you know, airfares, you know, when airfares are made cheaper and everyone jumps on them, and then, as we saw, prices go up if there's great demand. So in the United States, because there's so many sports, you can actually buy tickets according to, you know, when they're surging or not. And most people who go to the World Cup expect a flat rate for their tickets. And when they're planning to go from Portugal or Brazil or whatever, it's a big undertaking. So they're not really used to this idea that the prices can be adjusted.
The World Cup is obviously an enormous undertaking, but is it now too expensive to host? And is that perhaps why we're seeing it being shared amongst a number of countries this time round?
Yeah, it certainly helps to pass it around a few countries. I mean, Brazil had a huge undertaking and they took on the Olympics as well at the same time, and it really left them with a lot of sort of white elephant stadiums. But the good thing about North America, particularly the United States, is they've already built their stadiums. They've already built the infrastructure. And, you know, Mexico's held the World Cup twice, so they've got the infrastructure in place as well. That makes it a lot less risky if you've already got the stadiums.
What about the economic benefit, right? Is it better to win or better to host the FIFA World Cup?
Believe it or not, most economists say that it's probably better to host it. If you win it, there's a bit of a market reaction, a bit of a psychological boost, but it sort of goes away in 3 months. While hosting, you get a few more benefits in terms of tourism. But at the end of the day, if your economy is in recession, then the World Cup won't save it. It'll just make people feel a little bit better for at least a month or so.
That's Tim Harcourt there from UTS.
Hi, it's Noor Haider, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we bring you a single story, going beyond the headlines and taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Combining personal storytelling with analysis, we take you inside the stories that matter most. For fearless, independent reporting that holds power to account, listen to Full Story from The Guardian, wherever you get your podcasts.